Okay, here we go. Okay, I'll add that when we start, when I start the show next time. Okay, Dr. Roberts, that was a very interesting article you had about what's going on over there in the Ukraine, which is always interesting. And, you know, you mentioned that about the American flyer that was shot down, how they castigated him in the press. But meanwhile, our government doesn't do anything to all our people that lie to us on a constant basis. You know, and it's a shame, and I can't understand. Yeah, I can't understand why the American people aren't waking up as fast as they should be. I see them waking up a little bit. What's your take on that?
Well, Timothy, I think it's hard for them to wake up because they're hard pressed for time, for energy. They really don't have the time and energy to be well informed, and they rely on the mainstream media. They look at newspaper headlines, they have the morning news going on while they get ready to go to work or search for a job, and all they hear is the propaganda. Now, I think it is true that many of them realize that the reporting is incorrect, but they don't know what the real story is.
Right.
I've been talking to people with various kinds of jobs and different walks of life, and everyone distrusts the media, they distrust the government, or almost everyone, and yet they don't really know what it is really going on.
Right.
And so the only information they get is the propaganda, so that tends to be the only information they have. So it's the way they tend to think about things, even though they're suspicious of it. What I did in that little article you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, there's some hapless journalist, I forget his name, but he has told some story about being in a war zone in a helicopter, and the helicopter was hit from ground fire and had to land, and it seems like a harmless story, but somebody has come up and proven that that's not true. He was in a helicopter, but it wasn't hit. He didn't have to land. And so there's a huge federal case being made about this in the media. For example, I was traveling yesterday in the car and had National Public Radio on because the alternative were the Christian Zionist preachers. And it was all about this particular journalist. And they had audio tapes of his comments, and then they pulled down a professor of psychology from the University of California, and went on and on. And I got to thinking, in all doing this time, Timothy, NPR was interjecting into the various news reports John Kerry's statement, the Secretary of State, that Russian tanks were entering Ukraine, Russian troops, how much the U.S. wanted a peaceful diplomatic solution, but the Russians were frustrating all this, sending in tanks and troops. And it dawned on me that we've been listening to this lie for months and months. And on its face, it's obviously false, because either the Russian military is so ineffective that it can't do anything about the Ukrainians killing the civilians in the breakaway provinces, even if it sends in troops and tanks. And therefore, what is the Russian threat? Well, how is Russia a threat to the Baltics and Poland and so forth? So either there's no Russian military to worry about, or it's a lie, because I think, as everyone understands, if Russian tanks had entered the Ukraine months and months ago and were still doing that, Ukraine would have fallen last year or sometime. It would be totally in Russia's hands. And so I said, why is it that the American media is jumping all over this journalist who has misremembered some details of an unimportant story that nothing turns on? And they're crucifying this poor guy, and yet here is the Secretary of State lying through his teeth right in front of them. And no one wonders about, hey, how come the Russian tanks and the Russian troops are so ineffective if they really can't deal with the Ukraine? Why are we worried about it? And so I just thought that was a very interesting statement on how whore-like, prostitute-like the American mainstream media is.
What really gets to me is, you know, they show pictures of ISIS chopping off heads, and they show them burning that French journalist and all these other things, but yet they can't show us pictures of with all their spy satellites, they can't show us pictures of these armored comms supposedly going into the Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, doesn't anybody ever stop and think, like, where are the pictures? You know, what's...
Well, I think the answer to that, Timothy, is that probably that does occur to the mainstream media, but they know they're not allowed to ask that. If they say that, then the implication is that the United States government is lying. And therefore, the editor is going to say, you're going to get us both fired.
But,
so you can forget all about this. We can't challenge the U.S. government when it's at war. We have to be on their side and support their story. So I think the media knows, or at least a good percentage of the mainstream media must know, that the story of Russian tanks and troops in Ukraine is false. But they also know they're not allowed to say that. And they're not allowed to ask for the evidence, because there's not any evidence, and they know it, and the government can't produce any. And so then the government is caught in a lie, and the whole propaganda front collapses, and it gets out of Washington's control. So I think simply that the media hasn't enough independence or enough authority or enough security to be able to challenge any government lie. They just simply cannot.
Now, look at what Cheryl Atkinson from CBS did. She resigned after 21 years and said that the government has been censoring her her reports and frankly haven't allowed her to report on certain things. I mean, this is a woman that was with CBS for 21 years. I'm sure that put a crack in the wall of secrecy that the government dishes out.
Well, I think what it did, Timothy, it simply intimidated the other journalists. They said, well, look, if this person, with her long, distinguished career, can't say anything, and we certainly can't, I don't want to go the way of Cheryl and have to leave my job, where will I get another? And so I think that the government simply made an example out of Cheryl. They said, see, this is what happens to you if you try to tell the truth or contradict us. If you don't support our lies and our propaganda, we're going to get you. And I think that's what the story is. I mean, so I think it had the opposite effect on the media. The effect it had on the media was to intimidate them more, to scare them more, to make them more careful not ever to challenge the government on anything meaningful. So they find little things to challenge the government about that don't really matter, or they beat up on their own, like this poor journalist who misremembered about the helicopter fire. So there's no mainstream media. That's why the alternative, what they call the alternative media, which is part of the internet, not all of it, of course, has sprung up to cover this huge gap between reporting and the facts.
It's amazing. I live here in South Carolina, and I've been doing a lot of socializing lately with the people from different walks of life, and you know, nobody talks politics. Nobody cares. Everybody hates the Republicans just as much as they hate the Democrats here. I mean, it's amazing how just non-political they are. But they are political, but they just don't want to talk about it because to them, you know, and you ask them, they say, what's the use of talking about it? They're all lying anyway. And now this is supposedly a red state, you know, that's supposedly so, sides with the Republican warmongers like McCain and Lindsey Graham. And they don't care about them at all. Not at all. You know, so when people, they make this false divide against red states and blue states and liberals and conservatives, it's all a way to keep us fighting with each other. But people around here, you know, I live in upstate South Carolina, they don't want to fight. They don't want anything to do with it. And, you know, everybody's talking about when the world crashes, you know, what are we going to do? You know, to sustain a local economy. I mean, that's where people's heads are at down here.
Well, in some way, that's encouraging.
It is, to me anyway, because I remember 5 years ago, I wouldn't go out in public too much because I'd get myself in trouble. But nowadays, I say anything I want, and people sit there and agree with me. It's amazing. It's amazing the way people's, you know, minds have changed around here, and you know, this midterm election turnout was the lowest it has been since before the Civil War. So you know, the government's got to know that people just aren't taking them seriously anymore.
Well, yes, but during this long time that it's taken for some Americans to begin to catch on, the government has acquired more and more and more power over them. We no longer have any constitutional protections. We've got a domestic police state, massive spying. They know what you're doing every minute, all your purchases, who you talk to, what you say. For example, what we're saying right now, they're recording. So no one has any ability to act or to say very much without coming up on the radar screen and finding they're in some kind of trouble or accusation or on a no-fly list or who knows what. So when it takes so long to catch on that your rights have been eroded, it's hard then to act. And the government has been very successful in eroding all the rights of Americans. They are redefining any kind of dissent or protest as a form of domestic terrorism. And just as they've done in Egypt, this military government is exterminating the political party that actually won democratically the election that Washington had the military government overthrow, and those people are being exterminated based on all kinds of false charges and based on the principle that opposition to the military government is treason and terrorism. And so the same thing is starting to happen here. And the ability of the United States government to persecute innocent people is extraordinary. Yesterday on this new internet site, The Intercept, you know, the Glenn Greenwald site set up for him, there's a story of Professor Sami Al-Arian. Now, after 12 years of persecution, imprisonment, on false charges, trumped-up charges, he's finally escaped the Gestapo, the United States Department of Justice Gestapo. He left the country yesterday, deported. Now, all this, professor at the University of South Florida, and all he ever did was to advocate for Palestinian rights. But he was framed up as a terrorist. There was never any evidence, none. He suffered so much abuse from the Department of Justice that he and his lawyer, Jonathan Turley, professor at Georgetown Law School, very, very fine person, a very good attorney, and they decided that Al Arian should admit to one plea bargain agreement, one count of something, in order to end his ordeal, which had been going on for years. So he agreed. Okay, he says, all right, we'll give you this. And the deal was that everything would be dropped at that point. It was face-saving for the Department of Justice because they could never get a jury to convict him. The jury would always dismiss the charges or deadlock on them, and after trying, they couldn't get this guy convicted in the court, but they wouldn't turn loose of him. And so to get free of him, he said, okay, I'll agree, I'll give you a face saving, I'll agree to a plea bargain. They said, all right, that's fine, and it'll all be over. And as soon as he made the agreement, they reneged on it. They said, ha ha, you trusted us, bigger fool you. Got you. And they had no embarrassment about breaking their word, that is, the Justice Department. It didn't bother them in the least that the entire legal profession at home and abroad could see they had zero integrity. It hasn't, and it's been going on for 12 years through different attorney generals. It doesn't bother them in the least that they have demonstrate a total lack of any integrity, that there's no respect for law, just brute force, coercion, and it doesn't affect them. No one has in the Congress has said we got to impeach these people. This is a travesty. It's a destruction of the principles of law, of justice. So what do you make of that? I mean, if even the federal cabinet agency that's supposed to represent justice, truth, has total contempt for those things, what kind of country is it? How does Sami Al Arian's trial and persecution at the hands of the United States Department of Justice differ from Nicolai Bukharin's persecution and show trial at the hands of Joseph Stalin? It doesn't differ in the slightest.
No, and Massawi, who's been transferred to a federal penitentiary, has been writing about Saudi Arabia's hand in 9/11, and the papers are picking up on that, and now a bunch of people, a bunch of Democratic senators, I believe, want Obama to release the 11 pages of redacted information that they got from the 9/11 report. How far do you think that's going to go?
You know, Timothy, I haven't followed this very close, but my provisional view of this is that this is just more deep cover. I don't think Saudi Arabia could have pulled this off. I don't think the Israelis who were caught filming the collapse of the towers, who knew it was going to happen and had the camera set up, who was celebrating and giving high fives, and who later went on Israeli television, you know, after they were released from the United States because they had been apprehended, that went on Israeli television and said, well, we were sent there to record it. Well, clearly Israel knew about it if they sent them there to record it. And clearly they didn't know about it because they were set up to record it. And so how then are the Saudis in on it? Maybe they were used in some way. whole story is just to divert all of the evidence that the 9/11 Truth Movement keeps producing. You know, the 9/11 Truth Movement has been very successful in getting out facts about these buildings, and they have proved conclusively that Building 7 was a controlled demolition. And even NIST has admitted that the building came down at free fall acceleration, and that can only be achieved by controlled demolition. So the official story is starting to buckle. There are now something like 2,300 architects and engineers who have challenged the story. There are physicists, nanochemists. There are pilots, lifelong jet fighter pilots, commercial airline pilots who challenge the maneuvers of the planes. There are over 100 first responders, policemen, firemen who were in the towers who report hearing a series of explosions and even explosions in the sub-basements. So the whole story is starting to collapse, and so maybe this is just more deep cover. They've got this guy in prison. Who knows if they put pressure on him to say, you know, you could die in prison, but you could help us out. You know, maybe we could get you a pardon after 10 years. Maybe that's hard. We don't know. There's no way of knowing. What you have to ask yourself is, well, if why would the Saudis do it? What's it in their interest? The Saudis were on the neoconservative hit list along with Iraq and Syria and Libya and Iran. They're on the hit list.
Right.
So what do they get out of this? And if it's the Saudis, are they conspiring with Israel? How did these Israelis, you know, they were caught because people saw them filming it, saw them set up, and they said, well, they had to know about it. And they called the police, and they were picked up, and it turned out they were Mossad agents. They had multiple passports, you know, and we held them for a while, but they were never presented for questioning. The 9/11 Commission, I don't think, was ever even told about them. But if they were, they certainly didn't get into the report. And so who are these people? How does that relate? See, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a documented known thing. And I have personally watched the videos of them on Israeli television where they say we were sent there to film this. So clearly they knew. Did the Saudis call them up and tell them? Israel? Supposedly a close ally of the United States. Why would Israel then not tell the United States? Why would they send somebody to film something that they didn't bother to tell Washington about? I mean, it's just, I don't know what to make of it. I'm just very suspicious of this Saudi thing. It's almost like we've got many levels of cover. When one level wears out, they spring another one on you. And it's all to divert you from the fact that most likely it was an inside job, and most likely because the neocons were in control of the government at the time, totally in control. Cheney was running the response from the White House. It looks to me like it's just another way to divert the story. As the old story wears out, they come up with a new one, and all these levels of cover are designed to protect the real perpetrators. Well, that's just speculation. It makes more sense to me than the notion that Saudi Arabia somehow pulled off 9/11. Or that, you know, and we have the video of Bin Laden, the last video that experts attest is actually Bin Laden, and it's right after the event, and he says, I didn't have anything to do with this. The Americans need to ask their own governor about it. That I have anything against the American people. I'm opposed to their government's policy in the Middle East. I'm not opposed to the American people, and we simply did not do this. Now, clearly, you have to believe him, because he's not speaking out of fear. And we know for a fact that terrorists who do terrorist acts claim the credit because it grows the movement. In fact, back during the bombings associated with Operation Gladio in Europe, when there would be a bombing, usually several different alleged terrorist organizations would claim credit because they all wanted credit to build the movement, to show how effective they were. Actually, the bombings, according to the president of Italy, were conducted by the Italian intelligence and the CIA. And we don't even know if the terrorist groups claiming credit were real. They may have all been CIA fronts. But the fact is, and always, there would be several claiming credit, and all the experts at the time said, well, look, you know, they all claim credit because they're trying to build their following. And if you don't ever do anything, you don't ever succeed, then why should anyone flock to your banner? So I do think that if bin Laden was responsible, he would have said, ha, see what we can do to you? And millions and millions of Muslims would have flocked to his banner. Instead, he said, now you can do it, and Americans should look to their own government. So there's really very little that leads me to have confidence in the official explanation of 9/11, and the same reasons that I don't have confidence in official explanations make me doubtful of Saudi connections. It's almost like the neocons are now setting up Saudi Arabia for attack, because it's on their hit list. You can go online and see it. And Norman Fort Hurrens, who is editor of Commentary, Jewish Intellectual Magazine, he puts the list of people. And there's Saudi Arabia. They want to overthrow Saudi Arabia, too. So maybe what all this is the neoconservatives setting up Saudi Arabia for an attack like happened to Iraq, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan. So I'm highly suspicious of it. It doesn't ring true to me.
Well, you know, what started me on with 9/11 is I was in air defense for 12 years, and I was part of the Nike Hercules group. And on the acquisition radar, when somebody turns their transponder off, like these, supposedly these jets had their transponders turned off, I mean, when they send a signal out, there's a half circle underneath a radar blip. And if the transponder doesn't respond to that signal that it's sent from the ground, if it does respond, there's a whole circle over the blip. And if they didn't have their transponder on, there would have been four airplanes with only half circles underneath the blips. I mean, you could have picked them out of 3,000 or 4,000 airplanes in the vicinity. I mean, an idiot could have done it. And when they said that they turned their transponders off and they couldn't find them, that raised red flags with me. I mean, I was in it for 12 years. I know better than that. So, you know, that's what started me wondering, you know.
Well, see, Timothy, it takes specialized knowledge like you have there to know that. I didn't know that. And I'm sure that 99.999% of Americans don't know that. Unless somebody was in the position like you, they wouldn't know that this story about the transponders can't be true.
No, it can't be.
It can't be true. Just like, if based on what you're telling me from your experience, I mean, I believe you. And so the story can't be true. It's just like all the other aspects of the story, can't be true. It's hard to find any aspect of the story that it could be true. And the various experts and people who have knowledge here, they've all spoken out. And together it shows a story that simply doesn't hold up. And so why are we given a false story? It's to cover up the truth.
Right.
And then anyone, even experts, I mean even very distinguished scientists who say this is implausible. Oh yeah, so he's a conspiracy kook. So you have all these ignorant journalists, all these ignorant people who don't know anything about anything, calling experts kooks.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, now how can this be? I mean, how is it, I'm absolutely certain that nobody in the news business knows what you just told me. And yet, they're prepared to call people who actually do know things kooks, conspiracy theorists. And in fact, if you see what I've done is just report on the findings of experts, because nobody else much would report it. So I just reported on it. Well, that now makes me a conspiracy theorist. Of course, I don't have a theory. I'm reporting what experts are saying. But you're not allowed to, because you're not allowed to question the story. It's just like we started off this interview. All of a sudden, the press is beating up one of its own members for something that doesn't matter. And all during the program, we keep having interjected Kerry talking about Russian tank columns entering Ukraine. And nobody says, wait a minute, we're looking at the wrong liar here. let's give up on this journalist and look at Kerry. And let's ask him, how come all these tanks have been entering Ukraine from Russia for all these months? And there's no evidence of them, and there's no sign that they're effective in combat. How can this be? Can you explain this, Mr. Secretary? Well, you know, back even as recent as the Reagan years, the press was challenging the President and Secretary of State all the time. Any press conference, they were up there challenging. You mean Iran-Contra, whatever happened, they were challenging. No more. Nothing like that is challenged. And this is all post Reagan.
Right.
I think it's even post George Herbert Walker Bush.
Right. And because the six corporations that own almost every outlet in the mainstream media.
I think that's part of the explanation. That happened, I think, in Clinton's last year. Clinton permitted that. This is totally outside American history, American practice. The American way was to have large, dispersed, independent media, because that was the only way that people would be able to exercise control over the government. And so, generally speaking, through history, the government had supported that there could not be media concentration. And Clinton allowed them to completely change that and have five or six mega corporations buy up the whole thing. So now it's not dispersed, it's not independent, it's not run by journalists, it's run by former government officials and corporate advertising officials, executives. And the value of these huge mega companies is their federal broadcast licenses. And there's very few of them. And if they were to challenge the government, they might not have their licenses renewed, in which case the multi-billion-dollar business would drop to zero. Value would be worth nothing. And everyone has learned that the function of the media now is to be a propaganda ministry for the government and the corporations.
Right. What do you think about Angela Merkel and Francois Hollande going to meet with Putin today?
You know, I was wondering about that. Both France and Germany appear to be so much under Washington's thumb that I don't think they're capable of making an independent foreign policy decision. So I think most likely what's going on, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think most likely what's going on, they are agents of Washington. They're meeting with Putin for two reasons. One, to drag this out longer so Washington will have time to get arms to its puppet government in Ukraine. That's one reason. Other reason is to be able to say we're all for the diplomatic solution. We support a diplomatic solution, but Putin won't accept it. But what the diplomatic solution is, from the standpoint of the West, is that Putin has to eject Crimea, put it back in Ukraine, give up the Russian naval base on the Black Sea, their only warm water port, and help Ukraine suppress the Russians in the breakaway provinces. Now that's the diplomatic solution. That's what John Kerry means by diplomatic solution. It means Russia help Washington take over the entirety of Ukraine. And if Russia doesn't help Washington take over the entirety of Ukraine, including giving back Crimea, giving up its naval base, and helping Kiev suppress the breakaway provinces in the southern and eastern Ukraine, then Russia's against a diplomatic solution, and there's no alternative but to arm the Ukrainians. So I think that is probably what's going on.
Well,
and that Putin may suspect this, but he is committed to avoiding provocative acts on his part, and so he's going through the motions. And it may well be as well that there are factions in the Russian government that believe the future of Russia lies in its integration in the West. And therefore that Russia has to somehow accept Western decisions rather than its own. And Putin may find it difficult to override this faction. They're called Atlanticist integrationists. It means there are people in the Russian government who want Russia integrated into the Western world, and therefore Russia has to accept that on Washington's terms. And it may be that Putin is just doing this to show yet again that the only way Russia can be part of the West is to be a vassal state like the UK, Germany, France, and so on. So I suspect that
hello, Finian. Hold on, Finian. I got Paul Craig Roberts on.
Okay, Tim, sorry.
Hey.
Hey, Craig.
Hi there. Where you been?
Well, the internet really let me down here, you know, this South Carolina event. So, trying to contact you guys, but... anyway,
maybe he's...
I'm still here.
I don't know. Did you call in? Finian, did you call in yourself?
Yeah, I just quickly, as soon as I could, when the connection came back up, I just phoned Tim, and it's...
I'm still here. Can you hear me? Hey, Craig, are you still there?
Tim.
Yeah.
Can
you hear me, Finny?
Yes, Tim, I can hear you just about. I can hear Paul, I can hear Craig better, but you know, you're coming through now, Tim.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had my microphone switched off when you guys both came on. Craig, are you still on? Craig, can you hear me?
Who's there now?
We're all on. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you, Tim. I can hear Craig.
Yeah, we're all on now, huh?
Okay, well, we got another 10 minutes.
Well, let me sum up for Finian. You know, we were talking about Finian.
wrestling. I mean, I think there's definitely a new scramble for Africa going on, comparable to, you know, 100 years ago when the European colonial powers were gearing up to scour Africa for new resources. And I think you can. There's a sense of a new scramble for Africa going on, with especially now with the Chinese, and also the Russians have been making delegations to East Africa recently. Continent of the future. I mean, it's huge in terms of its resource potential. And I was in Djibouti recently, Craig. In fact, last week. And what a weird experience that was. I mean, it's a tiny country in the Horn of Africa, but you've got this huge military presence, in particular from the Americans, but also the Europeans, the French, of course, that's their old colony, Djibouti. You have Italians, also Japanese, Chinese, British, and it was weird. In Djibouti, it's a small country in the Horn of Africa, but you've got this all this huge military traffic. Right, I was talking to a few Djiboutians, native Djiboutians, and they were telling me that, look, you know, and they were speaking in French, and luckily my high school French could kind of facilitate some conversations, but they were saying to me, in fact, one of the guys used a very colourful expression. He described his country as a bordello, meaning that the majority of the Djiboutians are unemployed. They have no future economically. They are idle. They're just sitting around. But meantime, you've got multi-million dollars worth of military traffic coming into Djibouti. Now, I could actually visibly, I could see this. You know, near next to the civilian airport, you've got this massive American airbase, and you've got Black Hawk, Apache-type helicopters, you've got drones taking off, you've got massive military cargo planes, you also had CIA white small jets unmarked, and these were pointed out to me by the local denizens of the Djibouti. They could sort of tell the difference by now. So you've got this massive kind of military enterprise, not just the Americans, but the other Europeans, and also, as I said, Japanese and China. I didn't actually observe any Chinese or Japanese there, but certainly the Europeans were there in force. I mean, you had these guys coming into the airport in military fatigues, you know, as if it was a war zone. They would come in, they would go out, and it was constant traffic of military people. Now, my point is to really corroborate what you were saying, Craig, earlier on, that Africa is shaping up, if it hasn't already shaped up, to be a major site of contest in the international powers. And I reckon it's obviously, you know, it's got to do with resources for oil, gas, minerals. The continent is teeming with these resources. They haven't been developed because of historic colonial legacy of underdevelopment, but it's the resources are there, and I think AFRICOM, the American military kind of a department that was set up in 2007 under George Bush, that has been set up for the express purpose of, you know, trying to corner the continent of Africa before other competitors get in there in this new scramble for Africa, in particular with an eye on China, possibly Russia and other rivals, perceived rivals. But Africa seems to be the cauldron of the well, right now it's going on in Syria and Ukraine, but Africa will be the next cauldron of sharp imperialist rivalry. I've no doubt about it, and that explains the background to the AFRICOM setup and the French, this rash of French neo-imperialism, where the French have gone into Mali, Central African Republic, and their other former colonies. And I think that's significant. It's not just a coincidence, and it's not just on the back of the superficial pretext of human rights and countering terrorism. The French are getting in there, getting a foothold, or a new foothold into the continent, along with the Americans, along with the Chinese.
Well, I think the French are there. The French are there on our orders, and the Chinese go in economically. The Chinese are in there on an economic basis, doing economic deals. There's nothing that I know of Chinese military bases, Chinese training of African militaries.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks to me like the Washington's response to Chinese economic penetration is military.
Yeah, you're right.
Because to control the military, you can overthrow the government that is too accommodating to Chinese business interests. I've always thought one of the real reasons that Gaddafi was overthrown was the massive Chinese investment in eastern Libya, where the oil fields are.
The Chinese had huge
investments.
You're right, Craig. I should have actually clarified that a wee bit more in my previous take there.
to, it just looted other countries. We're very good at looting South American countries. But now, look, the West is looting itself. They looted Ireland.
Yeah.
They're looting Greece.
Yeah.
They've got Spain, Italy, Portugal lined up to be looted. So the West now, and we've already started looting Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So the West now is turned into itself, looting itself.
Mm-hmm.
And all these profits and, and keep a rigged system afloat. So it looks to me like the most amazing kind of overreach.
Yeah.
That I don't think any empire in history ever attempted. So what will be the consequence? It's got to be some kind of collapse or some kind of massive new world war. What do you make of this? And I've got to go.
Well, Greg, that was very kind of you to set me up with a huge subject. I mean, oh my God, I don't know how I can add any more to what you've said. You're asking me to put sort of icing on the cake. I mean, you've really, I think, laid it out. The juncture that we're at, it's complete madness, and a system that's out of control. I mean, we have to think of the previous, you know, epic collapses like the Roman Empire and, you know, maybe the British Empire, the decadence of an old Ancien regime, and it's flailing around trying to save itself, and it's just the more it does that, it seems to be the quicker it's going down. I mean, the danger is, of course, that we could really precipitate a catastrophe with these mad people trying to shore up their perception, their perceived empire. I mean, no doubt there are powerful people still, very rich people still extant in this empire, and in trying to shore up their interests, their privileges, their wealth, they could precipitate a cataclysm, in particular with regard to Russia. And that's I think why you and I and Tim and people, many other people out there are trying to do, is to try to try to enlighten the public to deflate this political, crazy juggernaut that is pushing us all towards a precipice. Greg, I can't add what you have already laid out in a very panoramic way. I mean, you've really, I think you've described late empire in a most eloquent way, and I don't think I could add really much more to it.
Timothy could talk about these various things. Where do you think an explosion may happen? I mean,
well, I think Ukraine.
You know, Greece could use an explosion.
Ukraine has certainly, got to be the tinderbox right now. North Korea, who knows? I mean, I think war is always a way out of a collapsing empire. And whenever, I would say the capitalist economy, global economy, is in a jam. War is always a great way to break out of that impasse. We had it. My analysis would attribute the First World War and the Second World War to these kind of like huge, cycles of where the capitalist economy goes into a dead end and tries and frees itself through war. And in some ways, it's a very successful mechanism because, with the destruction that is entailed in these wars, then there's huge regeneration of the economy. And I think we're at that kind of juncture again, Greg. War could be seen as a solution. I mean, it's a terrible way to put it, but that's what some people would probably perceive as a mechanism to break out of the impasse. And I think Ukraine, that's why I can detect from your writing, the urgency of your recent writings, Craig, and myself included, and many other people. I think that's why it's such an urgent scenario right now with Ukraine. We could be looking at, you know, a war igniting because of the nature of the system being in a huge impasse, and war being a way out of that impasse, however dastardly and heinous a way out that is, but it is a kind of a way out for the system in its current stagnant situation.
And also, you know, the United States. The United States wants to get rid of all these cuts.
I'm going to have to leave. Can you come back on with Finian?
Sure.
I'm going to have to go. If I sign off, it won't break up the connection, will it?
No, it won't break up the connection. No. And thanks for coming on, Dr. Roberts. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's do it again. I enjoy you and Finian a lot, and I look forward to our next one. But I've got to go now, and I did get to talk to Finian for 30 minutes. Which was very, very good. I'll leave you and Finian to finish this. You don't want your program to get too long, perhaps, but I have to go now. And my best regards to both of you, and I look forward to next get together.
Okay.
It was a pleasure, and I'm sorry for being so late on this conversation, but it was a pleasure to talk with you again.
All right, I look forward to next time.
Okay, great. Good health to you. Take care.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Finian, you still there?
Yes, Tim. Oh, Tim, I'm really, really sorry about that.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Now, I know you have internet connections over there. I was just going to say to Dr. Roberts, I was going to tell him, this is one way the United States can get around all these congressional cuts that they put into our budget, and to increase our military by scaring the hell out of the American people with the threat of war with Russia. So they, so the military-industrial complex does well, which is the only way, one of the only ways it's keeping our economy afloat is through the military-industrial complex. So I can see where this is going, And I think the last thing in the world that the United States really wants to do is get into a war with Russia, because there's no way, if Hitler couldn't do it, if Napoleon couldn't do it, we're sure not going to do it by transporting a whole army and navy and air force over to Europe. It just isn't going to work. Yeah.
All around the world, they don't want it. I mean, this is a kind of an elite-driven agenda, the bankers, the corporate heads, and their puppets in government. It's great business for them. It's great. Well, the stupid bastards think it's good business, but I mean, it's so ludicrous what they're doing. But the smell of money kind of blinds their, completely their any kind of rational thinking. These people just, want to get profits. But, I mean, the majority of the people, it's got nothing, they've got no interest in this dynamic towards war. And I can't really quite get the superlatives to describe it. It's just abominable. But thankfully, the likes of, the alternative media like Information Clearinghouse, your radio station, Paul Craig Roberts, hopefully what I'm doing, and many, many other people, we are there to give a completely different perspective that will, if you like, I hope, Tim, what we're doing is we're creating a political mass, or, a mass among the people that retards or prevents the elites from what they would like to do. In previous times, because of the way the information worked, they would have had a monopoly on the information, and they would have railroaded us into a war by now. But thanks to the alternative media that's out there now, we're hopefully impairing their monopoly, their control of the agenda. I hope, I mean, they could still get away with it or try to get away with it, but I think, you know, we've got a lot of powerful alternative communications on our side to try and derail these elites who would wish to launch a big war, and a cataclysmic war, as it would turn out to be.
Well, that's what Gerald Celante in his last show said. The alternative media is like the only hope that we have left to get away from all of this government propaganda.
Yeah, I didn't see Celante's last piece, but is that what he said? Well, I totally agree with him there, Tim. You know,
I mean, Russell Brand's making a big hit in England and the United States by just letting out common sense stuff, and people are listening to him, you know. And it's not just him, it's a whole bunch of different people that you know.
Yeah.
I know here in South Carolina, which is supposedly a conservative state, people just don't trust the government whatsoever. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. They don't want anything with them. They don't even want to talk about it. You know, which is surprising from 5 years ago. I mean, just like I was telling...
That's a good, healthy sign of healthy skepticism. And the same goes across Europe. I mean, people like David Cameron, I mean, they're just a joke. And, you know, your man Francois Hollande, and, you know, there's such contempt and skepticism of what those people say. And there's a complete, I think they're way behind the curve. I mean, most people are you know, tuned into, well, as far as I can tell, a lot of people, I don't know if most people, but a lot of people, a significant section of the population, are getting their news from the internet and alternative news. They're not listening to the BBC or CNN or, you know, the politicians. So whenever these politicians come out and say something, they're just kind of like derided as kind of like figures of you know, like fun, like, and which is, in my view, good, and it's a positive sign of resistance to the narrative that's coming of governments. I mean, Tim, I just want to think of it. I mean, one important example of how the alternative media succeeded was, if you remember about a year ago when there was that chemical the chemical weapons incident in Syria. It was the August of 2013, I think, if I haven't got mixed up with the years, but it was, I think it was around August 2013. Now Obama and you know, was ready to bomb Syria on the back of allegations that the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad had used chemical weapons. Now he very quickly, very abruptly went off that bombing campaign. Well, the British Parliament voted against any kind of such measure. That deflated Obama's, the Washington's kind of like momentum to do the same. And then I think a week later, he actually capitulated on that proposal. You know, he kind of like accepted a Russian diplomatic intervention to rid Syria of chemical weapons, even though the Syrian government didn't actually use chemical weapons. But I think, Tim, that to me was a great example of where the alternative media had created an alternative narrative, an alternative argument, which faced down the official narrative, the official momentum of trying to bomb Syria. And so, I you know, that's one example of where the alternative media is creating an alternative consciousness and an alternative narrative of public opinion, which is a political force that to counter what the mainstream, the traditional kind of mainstream official political or media viewpoint would So it is, I think, significant, Tim, that we are, you, me, Dr. Craig, Paul Craig Roberts, hundreds and thousands of other people out there, are having an effect. It might not always seem like it, but it is a tangible, real political effect. That is the difference between these elite powers going to war or trying to instigate a war, or you know, trying to create a more a peaceful alternative or a different alternative. So I just want to you know, acknowledge that I think we are in real business of changing the course of the political machine that is there in the Washington or London or wherever.
Yeah, not only that, Russia today has made a big difference in the United States. I mean, even Victoria Nuland last week had an interview where she said Russia today is nothing but propaganda, and if they weren't worried about it, she wouldn't have mentioned it.
We can have these different fora. I mean, who would have imagined 20 years ago that a Russian channel like Russia Today would have been so popular in America or anywhere, or Europe? I mean, it's going to be unthinkable, but, you know, because of modern communications, luckily, we can avail of these alternative viewpoints. And yes, I think Russia Today, Press TV, many others like it, and of course the Western alternative media like yourself, like Global Research, like Information Clearinghouse, Counterpunch. I don't read Counterpunch a lot, but there are a plethora of alternatives, not just from other countries, but within the Western countries themselves, and they are no doubt having a corrective influence on the official narrative that would have us all go to war.
Yeah, I believe so too, and I believe that if we don't keep it up, and if we don't constantly remind people of what the truth is, that they'll never know. Because, you know, and like Paul and I were, Craig and I were talking, saying that, you know, five or six media outlets own the entire mainstream news in the United States, and that's done by design.
Well, Tim, I mean, you know, that's where I want to pay compliments to you for what you're doing, and it's really a huge contribution to an alternative direction and a more sane, peaceful, prosperous, you know, humane alternative direction. I'm really just sorry, Tim, that, you know, I couldn't have joined you and Dr. Craig Roberts earlier because of this internet connection. It's just hazard, Tim, of where I am. But I'm glad I got a little bit of the conversation there towards the end. And you know, I mean, thanks, Tim, for having me on. I'm really sorry again that we just missed out on the full course.
No, that's all right. You know, we got enough, and you got to talk to Dr. Roberts, and he got to talk to you, and I think he enjoyed it, and we'll do it again soon.
Tim, please do, if it suits Dr. Roberts, you know, I'll be here for the next, you know, over the next week, if he can manage it. I'm sure he's very busy, but it's just a really unfortunate breakdown today. You know, probably, you know, next week it would work, you know, it'd be fine. But let's try it again anyway, Tim. Will you set it up and I'll try to get there.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Hi, Sue. Anyway.
No, she's doing good. She just hurt her foot again, but she's on the mend. So, yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah. You had a medical appointment there on Monday, I think,
Yeah, well, it's all right. She's fine. She's right next to me. You know.
Hi, Timmy.
Yeah.
Can I loosen you there, buddy?
No, you're not losing us. She's right here.
Hi, Finian.
Okay. Let's see. I hope your food's better.
Oh, thank you very much. It's on the mend.
That's great to see. Right, well, look, enjoy yourselves. Have a nice weekend. And Tim, brother, don't lose patience on me. Just give me another chance next week.
Okay, I'll send you the link to the show. He's right on the money, isn't he? Well, so are you.
That's formidable. He's formidable. Thank God we've got him on our side, like, you know.
Well, that's why I put you on with him, because both of you are formidable, in my opinion.
Tim, you're very kind, but I'll humbly accept that, just, you know, out of gratitude. But anyway, Tim, you take care, Tim, but try to set it up for this day next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, brother, take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.